And here we go. Hello, everyone. This is Premier Chess CEO, National Master Evan Rabin, and I am here on a very special 144th episode of the Premier Chess podcast with a very special guest, Grandmaster Viktor Mikhalevsky, who last week actually won the Israeli Chess Championship for the second time. He first did that in 2014. The tournament obviously got rescheduled a couple times because of COVID, but thankfully they were able to do it in Haifa. It was obviously a very competitive tournament. I do want to mention this is our second Israeli grandmaster on the podcast. We had Boris Alterman a couple months ago, who founded Chessmatech, who I'm sure you're friends with. And, of course, my coach, Grandmaster Landon Udasin, who I'm actually starting to write a book with in the near future, actually. So, Viktor, you've been obviously a very strong player, for many years. In 2010, you were the seventh player in Israel and 171st, highest in the world. Tell us a little bit that we don't know about yourself.
Hi, Evan. Hi, everyone. I'll start with when I started to play chess. I was about 5-6 years old. I was taught by my older brother, Alexander, who is an international master by himself. So he's a coach for a very long time.
Is growing up back in Belarus, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Before we immigrated to Israel in 1991, we used to live in Belarus.
I want to definitely go into Israel and your career, and of course the recent tournament. Belarus actually is close to me. Thanks to my very good friend Deborah Brunner, who actually runs a nonprofit based out of the UK, called the Together Plan. She actually basically connects Belarusians back in Eastern Russia and Western Russia and the US, and all around the world. And I would definitely encourage you to look into the Together Plan as well. But thanks to her, I actually found out that my great-grandmother is from Belarus. as well. I literally had no idea. And it literally happened to be, I was talking to my grandmother and I mentioned, my friend Deborah, who I just met, because I really thought like her whole project was so interesting. And she was like, you do know, Selma was from Belarus, right? I was like, I must have as a kid, but I just, she passed away when I was young and I didn't know, and I also put something on Facebook looking for Belarusian chess players, you're one of those. So could you just talk a little bit about your upbringing in Belarus and, how you, and your brother, who, it's an international master, got started?
It all started with my father really liking chess. And so he taught my brother when he also was young. And so he had pretty good results at school. He was close to the national master, but it wasn't easy to get the title in Belarus because there were almost no tournaments there. But he was the level of a national master before he graduated, finished his school. And when he came back from the Soviet Army, he started to teach me, because he's 14 years older than me. So I was about 6 back then. And so it was kind of natural to me to start playing chess, my father liked chess, my brother played already chess on a very good level. I had pretty good results from early age, I would say. So at the age of 8, I was already second category, then at the age of even first category, and at the age of 10 candidate, no, at the age of 12, I got the candidate to master title. Mm. So it was pretty early for those times. And yeah, I've never got the title of the Soviet master, because I didn't even have a chance to play in those tournaments. And I've never played outside of Soviet Union up to the age of 17, because it was kind of difficult to travel abroad. I mean, you were not even allowed to do so. So my first rating I got only at the age of 17. First FIDE rating. And the first rating was already 2375. So it means I was already a pretty good player, but I just didn't have a chance to play abroad.
So I think growing up in Belarus, you definitely, you know, got started. And in 1991, why was it that your family decided to make Aliyah to Israel?
It was kind of natural for us, because of course we knew always that we were Jews, right? And there was not even a question, because we had the chance to go to the US and to Israel, right? And we all decided that we want to go to Israel. It's not that we are Zionists or something, but it was kind of natural for us. And so as soon as there was such an option, we just prepared documents and went to Israel.
I'm Israel Chai. So by the way, Victor, one thing I didn't mention to you, I'm far from fluent, but I did take 4 semesters of Hebrew, plus another Olpan when I was studying at Tel Aviv University, actually. Have you lived elsewhere in Israel, or have you been pretty consistently in Be'er Sheva?
Most of the time, yes. When we arrived to Israel, we started from Oda Sharon. It's a small town, about 40 minutes north of Tel Aviv.
Ramat HaSharon, you said?
Oda Sharon.
Oda Sharon. Okay, because I knew Ramat HaSharon, because that's closer to Tel Aviv, so that's why I get confused.
Yeah. Oda Sharon is also not too far. A relatively big city for Israel, not far from Oda Sharon, is Kfar Saba.
Got it. Okay. I actually played a tournament not too far from there in 2018 oh my goodness, what's the name of the place? Kiryat Orno.
Kiryat Orno, yeah.
Yeah. It was a 48 game rapid tournament. You might know the director, actually. Forgetting his name offhand, but a very nice guy. That was a lot of fun, actually. So the next thing I wanted to ask you about, I mean, for such a small country and especially a small city, you know, I think there's I know Yudasin actually, grew up in Be'er Sheva.
Not too far from 300,000.
You know, which like really, really is like, you know, it's crazy. You know, I think there's like maybe even almost like more like grandmasters in Be'er Sheva, you know, than, here. I mean, it's an example.
It used to be. Now it's just me and my Mark Zeitlin. No more grandmasters live in Be'er Sheva.
Hmm. But like, how did Be'er Sheva like get so into chess, you know? Was it like one of you and it just kind of like trickled in?
It all started from Eliyahu Levant. He came to Israel, also made in Aliyah in 1973. So he came to Be'er Sheva. There was nothing there. It was just like a desert, you know? No chess at all. So he started the chess club. And one of his first students was Alon Greenfield, who is now a grandmaster and also 2-time Israeli champion.
I actually played him once in a rapid tournament in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, so mostly thanks to him, Beersheba became an empire in chess.
Wow. So, yeah, and I just find it, like, you know, so interesting. And, yeah, obviously there were a lot of, you know, Soviet immigrants there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, look, it says it right on the Wikipedia page. Mm-hmm. You know, like in the third paragraph, you know, the Soviet immigrants have made the game of chess a major sport. It's now Israel's national chess center with more chess grandmasters per capita than any other city in the world, making mm-hmm. it the chess capital of the world in some regards. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it really is, you know, so cool that, you know, and by the way, it's definitely an up and coming, you know, city in general. You know, many people, you know, may not know, but, you know, it's also the home of course, Ben Gurion, you know, the biggest tech university in Israel, would you say, probably?
Maybe not the biggest, but one of, yeah.
You know, that and the Technion and Haifa, but, you know, it's up and coming, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you see, like, desert, and then, you know, big university.
yeah,
you know, which is amazing. So, so yeah, let's you know, switch gears a little bit and talk about, you know, a little bit more of, you know, your career. You know, I every, you know, grandmaster, another strong player I bring on, you know, I do like to just learn a little bit more about, you know, how you became successful. You know, everyone has, you know, a little different story. Some people, you know, have gotten started, you know, very, very early. You know, some people are, you know, a little bit older. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, I've had, you know, Susan Polgar on the podcast who, you know, like, wow, like, you know, she and her sisters learned when they were four. Yeah. You know, and I mean, it's, in my mind, like, crazy. You know, two of them are grandmasters and one of them is an international master.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, which is, you know, and of course, Judith was, you know, second in the world. So, but of course, I have other people who, you know, have started chess much later. So, and I know you've traveled, you know, quite a bit. You've also played a fair amount of tournaments in, you know, the US and, you know, all around the world. But what would you say, you know, if you had like one or two, like, you know, keys to success in terms of, you know, becoming a strong grandmaster? As compared to, you know, let's say a class player or like a, you know, a master who's not a grandmaster like myself, like what are your like one or two biggest keys to success?
Well, I believe first of all you really need to love the game, right? Without it, it's kind of difficult to become a strong player, right? When I started, my dad bought a couple of books of Capablanca and Alekhine games, and I really liked to go over the games of the world champions back then when I was about six, right? Really, when I just started to play chess, so I think that helped a lot. So I had an idea where to place pieces, right, and what they think about when they play. So I think it really helped me in the beginning, at least, but maybe also throughout my career as a chess player. Then it was kind of easier for me than for some other players because my brother was my personal coach, right? So I always had a coach at home. So if I needed something, then he always was next to me. So that, of course, helps as well. Then even though I didn't have many tournaments, but we still had some tournaments in Belarus. I played mostly in Belarus and also very few tournaments outside of Belarus, such as the junior championships of the Soviet Union, to which I qualified every single year because I was a champion of Belarus in at my age for most of the years. I was in school, so I played five Soviet junior championships. So this also gave me some experience, of course. For instance, the players of my age are like Shiro, Akopyan, Kramnik, they all played in these junior championships. There are many more, like Tiviakov, Sakaev, many well-known grandmasters. So there was a pretty high level of playing those championships. So this also gave me some experience. Probably also need some talent, right? Without it, it's also kind of difficult. You can reach a certain level even with some hard work and without talent, but talent is definitely needed if you want to reach the GM level.
Amazing. And I think like the biggest thing that you said, which, you know, it's definitely extremely important, something simple, you just need to enjoy it.
For sure.
Which is something that I think a lot of, chess teachers and chess coaches forget sometimes. My very good friend, Jason Bowie, who actually volunteers with me in most G10s and NIA, where we go teach for 6 days, a year. One of the biggest things he talks about, all the time is, look, if students are not enjoying it, they're not going to actually move forward, at least long-term. And I do know actually many title players, who have burnt out of chess because they were just like so serious and,
many of them take it as a regular job, and then it's
exactly
to show good results.
Let me tell you, or ask you, I'm pretty sure over the years, you've certainly had, drawbacks. What one thing that, a lot of people forget sometimes, right? Is like, the top players in the world, they have setbacks. So, and then I'm sure some of these setbacks may have threatened, your enjoyment, of the game. Yeah. So could you tell us about maybe a time that you did have a setback and how you sort of overcame it?
I reached my highest point, at least in ratings in 2008. It was 26-32. So I was in the top 100 in the world back then. And then from that point on, it went downhill for quite a while. And my rating went down to almost 2500. I was just like 2503 at some point. So I lost like more than 100 points. And frankly, you don't really know what happens, right? Because it seems that you play the same chess, right? And you do all the same, but then your rating just goes down in every single tournament and you just cannot do anything. So I'm not even sure what happened that it just changed the direction again and it went up again.
Right.
Yeah, so even if you ask some top players, it will be difficult for them to answer this question, right? So
I think just the biggest thing, right, is being able to realize that, actually Grandmaster Arena Crush said something recently that I really appreciated. And mm-hmm. She basically just said that, a lot of people get stressed about the last round of a tournament. Mm-hmm. But she actually used it as something else. It's actually just the last round until the first round of the next tournament. And that mm-hmm. tournament's going to have a last round. And there's going to be many more last rounds. Right? So just realizing that, it might seem like it's, all the marbles or nothing. It's actually just a way of, preparing yourself, for the next time. And constantly improving, right? Yeah. So
it could be your attitude, of course. If you just feel that you really have to win the game, it might be difficult for you. Yeah, you just have to take it easy. Even the decisive rounds. Yeah, if you feel a lot of pressure, it's really difficult.
Absolutely. And, you know, at the end of the day, you just got to, like, do the everything that's in your power and try to, constantly, you know, move forward and, you know, succeed. So, let's talk now about, you know, the recent tournament that you won. You know, it's your second time winning the Israeli championship. And, you know, by the way, it definitely was, you know, far from, you know, an easy event. You know, one, you know, I just have to ask, you know, only because, you know, over the board chess is still not very common. I know in Israel, you're light years ahead, you know, with vaccines and everything. But what was it like? It's such a weird question that, you know, we need to even ask, but like, yeah, what was it like playing like such a big over the board tournament? You know, like with the precautions, I did see some photos. I know like, all the players were vaccinated and, you know, most people were wearing masks and all that, but what was it like playing an over the board tournament now, you know, during COVID?
Yeah, of course. First of all, of course, most of the players were very happy to come back to the over the board chess league, because we haven't been playing for almost a year, most of us, and so it was a big pleasure to come back to the board and just play some real chess. Yeah, no, not the online chess which most of us played, but that's not the same.
Right? It's not the same. So yeah, what did you? Like, were there any, like, you know, issues with some of, like, the precautions or anything like that? Or was it, like,
No real problems, in fact, during the tournament. In the beginning, it's a little unusual. You have to play in a mask, right? There is a barrier between the players, a plastic barrier. Yeah, it's kind of unusual, but then you just get used to it and you forget about all these things. You just play the game and yeah. I was just focused on the games mostly, so yeah, I didn't put much attention on the restrictions. Maybe that helped me.
No, absolutely. So let's move on to the chess now. So yeah, I mean you won first place. You know, you got 7 out of 9, you know, you had obviously several, you know, wins against, you know, very strong players. You know, one against Grandmaster, you know, Tamir Nabati, another one against Avital Borkevsky, plus you know, several other IMs and you know, strong players. What was your favorite game of the tournament?
Favorite game? Probably the easiest one, surprisingly, was against Tamir Nabati, who is the strongest player in the tournament. I won in just 17 moves. And, the game went really well for me, but it wasn't his day for sure. He made a few mistakes already. In the first 14 moves, he could have already resigned.
Wow.
Yeah. Because usually you don't beat 2,600 players like that, but yeah. So that was a special game, of course. Yeah, and it also changed the situation in the tournament, because then he was already 1 point behind, and it was difficult for him to catch up with.
Yeah, I just pulled up the game here, you know, because I had to. I guess he just had like a lot of strong play on the light squares, and you know, I guess he never really got, you know, even that much counterplay. By the way, we don't even normally do a lot of like technical conversation, you know, on the podcast. You know, just because most people are not looking at a board or whatever. If everyone wants to check it out, you know, they can. This is, Michal Levski versus Nabati, you know, in the Israeli Championship 2021. Round 7. 9 days ago. Where do you think he went wrong in this game?
A few times. It all started with, okay, first of all, on the second move, he surprised me with bishop f5. Mm. He often plays some weird stuff in the opening. The move bishop f5 by itself is not that weird, but a little rare, we can say, in this position. So I mean, I
played knight f6 in this position myself, right?
It's normal. Knight f6, c6, the bishop f5 seems to be a little bit early, but probably white cannot do much about it. Yeah, so but I started to surprise him right away with the forced move knight h4. It all started from here, I believe. And then on move five, I think he already made first inaccurate move when he took the pawn d takes c4. That was already the first inaccuracy. And then already on the very next move, it was probably already a mistake, e5 on move six.
Yeah, I mean, it really does look like you just have a nice development and, you know, strong bishop on g2. And
The move e5 looks kind of natural to just, it helps to develop, but then he had some immediate problems, surprisingly. And even his move, bishop, eighth move, bishop b4 already led to some big problems. It also looks like a natural move to give a check, develop your bishop, right? But then he had some problems with the d6 square later in the game.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, so just a few moves in the game and he was already in trouble. That was really surprising.
Hmm. Yeah, that really is interesting, I think. You know, it goes to show you, I think, a couple important lessons. I mean, you know, one, you know, I get from adult beginner students all the time, you know, like, what should I do with, like, my openings? How much should I, you know, learn? Yet you have, you know, this strong grandmaster who, you know, don't get me wrong, this is not typical, but, you know, he lost the game in 17 moves. You know, certainly, I think you definitely played a little bit of a sideline here, you know, maybe wasn't like fully prepared or, you know, whatnot, but, the truth is like, you don't need to like necessarily study openings that much, you know, as you're growing, as a chess player, of course. So speaking of which, I did want to talk a little bit about you as a coach, as well. Mm-hmm. One thing I had no idea of actually until I was doing a little bit of research about you yesterday to, you know, get ready for the episode, is you actually taught my good friend Sam Schenklin. We actually went to Brandeis
together. For a very short time, of course, but
A little bit, but you know, you worked with him and, you know, Joshua Friedel and a couple other, you know, strong you know, grandmasters.
Yeah, it was just one session of 1 week.
Oh, wow. really short.
yeah, but just one session anyway, so.
But yeah, like, could you tell us just like, you know, very quickly about, you know, like your coaching career as well and how you've, you know, any tips that you might have developed after, you know, training some top players. I'm sure you've also trained, you know, a lot of strong Israeli grandmasters and title players as well.
Well, in fact, I mostly teach young players, so I wouldn't say that I taught many grandmasters, right? Maybe some future grandmasters. But I had a lot of students from India, and let's say one of them, Arjun Erigaisi, he made the GM title at the age of 14. So I took him when he was, about 12. And his rating was around 2300, so he was already a pretty strong player. But I helped him to reach the GM title in a couple of years. So that was probably one of my biggest successes as a coach. Right. Of course, there were many more strong players. For instance, same Avital Borukovsky you talked about, whom I beat in the Israeli Championship. I also used to teach him for a few years when he was the master level. He got the international master back then while I was coaching him. And he was also the European champion under 18, I believe. So, yeah. So, and now he is, of course, also a very strong player. And one more player which I wanted to mention was Michael Song from Canada. He won the under 12 World Champions. No, he didn't win, I think. He finished probably second or third. Yeah, but it was a very good result. Yeah.
Okay. So related to the coaching question, and actually the last question I really wanted to, you know, ask you, you know, one thing that I've been talking to a lot of students about recently is just, you know, in general, what separates like weaker players and stronger players, right? So people ask me all the time, you know, especially like from non-chess players, you know, how good are you in chess, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure like you've gotten the same question before. And it's always actually like a really tricky question to answer, you know, compared to a large majority of people in the world, you know, I'm very strong. I'm a master compared to, you know, yourself or Yu Dawson or, you know, Mark Paragua, who's actually the grandmaster who teaches for us on our team. You know, I'm not that good. but then, you know, of course you compare, you know, someone like yourself and Magnus Carlsen, and that's, you know, a whole nother conversation, right? So, right, like on the whole, right? And I remember actually back when I was, you know, 2000, like USCF and actually lower FIDE, you know, I remember like, you know, I had issues, you know, because my opponents would stop blundering. And I realized, you know, even myself, you know, I'm you know, 2200 now, and, you know, FIDE, I'm a little lower, I'm like, you know, 2050, you know, but even if I'm going to beat someone my own rating, okay, like I need to work to outplay them.
Yeah.
Right. They're not going to just, you know, hang a night.
Yeah.
For nothing. Right. So I guess my question is that I've asked a lot of other, you know, strong players on the podcast is, what sort of advice do you have to get from, you know, my level, right? Like, you know, national master, you know, to, you know, a very strong grandmaster, or even from, you know, a solid international master, you know, to, you know, a strong grandmaster.
Yeah. Yeah. There are two main advances, I would say. First of all, as I said already, you really need to love the game, otherwise nothing is going to help. You can reach certain level, but that's it. But the most important thing, you have to work a lot on chess. Yeah, nothing can replace it, right? You may have a natural talent, whatever, but if you don't work a lot, you cannot reach big results. So if you take any top player, they work more than like regular grandmasters. Even though they are much higher level, they know much more, they have a bigger talent, but still, they work a lot of hours per day. And without this routine, you cannot really achieve really big results. So I think that's the main difference between like club players, let's say, or even some master players and the grandmasters and the top players. So that's mostly the attitude to chess, I believe. So if you want to achieve good result, you really need the professional attitude. Right, so you have to work a lot, and also during the tournament, you need some regime and stuff like this.
Yeah, and I think, you know, look, one thing people don't realize sometimes actually is, you know, like physical fitness is important.
For sure,
Magnus Carlsen is, you know, a big, you know, like tennis player, I know, right? So, yeah, I think it's...
fitness, like, of course, is also very important for professional players. Okay, maybe also reach some results without being really fit, but... Yeah, but it helps a lot, of course, especially in the long games. right? You really need to be fit.
So, yeah, well, look, I really want to thank you so much for, you know, taking some time to, you know, talk here about, you know, your upbringing in Belarus and, you know, making Aliyah to Israel, you know, the rise of Be'er Sheva as a chess city, you know, talking about some of your, you know, keys to, you know, success and, you know, overcoming some of the, you know, challenges, you know, especially with, you know, the new back to, you know, over the board chess scene. And yeah, of course, talking a little bit about coaching, you know, some top players, not just from Israel, but, you know, from the US as well and, you know, around the world. And yeah, I want to, you know, again, wish you, you know, a big mazel tov. Congratulations for winning the Israeli championship, you know, for the second time. And hopefully, you know, that'll be, you know, many, many more. So, so Victor, if is there anything else you would like to cover while you're on here? Any books or other projects you might be working on?
Not really. I just wanted to thank you for inviting me to your podcast. It was a pleasure to be here. And yeah, everyone interested in chess lessons can always contact me. I'm open to coaching, right? Even though I have quite a few students, but I'm ready to take new ones who really like the game and want to improve.
Well, look, we definitely, you know, highly recommend you as an option. You know, I think the Israeli championship title definitely, you know, probably carries a lot of weight, actually. So last question, Victor, actually, if anyone does want to reach out to you, you know, learn a little bit more about, you know, lessons, you know, maybe potential collaborations or, you know, anything else, what would be a good way for people to reach you?
Just email me would be the best.
Okay. Well, definitely, yeah, get in touch with him. And what is your email for everyone to reach out?
It's V. Michalevsky, like V from Victor and Michalevsky, like in FIDE rating. Yep. And at hotmail.com.
Okay. And of course, if you missed that, you know, reach out to us and we'll certainly.
Yeah, you can also find me on Facebook. So, yeah, you can also contact me there if you like.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time, Victor. Mazel tov again, and we'll definitely be in touch soon. Thank you so much.
Toda rabah.
Bavakasha.
Bye.